You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Who has the toughest job in the Army, aside from those deployed in Iraq and Afghanistan? After 5 years of bloody combat, one might reasonably argue that the toughest job belongs to recruiters. Their job is to find young people willing and able to serve, knowing there is an extremely high chance they will spend time in a war zone. A new documentary called The Recruiter debuts tonight at 9 on HBO. It shows just how difficult that job can be by following one of the most successful recruiters in the entire United States, Master Sergeant Clay Usay, and four of his enlistees, handpicked from the senior class of the local high school in rural Louisiana. Filmmaker Edith Belzberg spent months following the recruit's path to basic training, and she joins us now to talk about what she witnessed. Edith, welcome to Think.
Thank you so much for having me here today.
How did you decide on Clay Usay as the person around whom to build this story?
Well, it was really at the height of the war in 2004, and I knew I wanted to do something on the war, and I wasn't sure what. And I started getting subscriptions to all sorts of magazines and journals, one of which was the Army Times. And after a few months of reading, I read an article about the Army Times Soldier of the Year, who received the award in part for recruiting more young men and women than anyone in America at that time. And that was Sergeant Clay Usay.
And initially, he tells you he felt bad about performing this desk job when all of his buddies were still in harm's way in Iraq.
Yes. I mean, I think there are many reasons why he was so successful, and one of which was that he felt that every person he was recruiting, he wanted to be sure that he would want to fight, be with them overseas if that time came. And he also felt that he was helping, as he says, his brothers who were currently serving.
You show him in the film working really hard to build relationships with these potential recruits in a way that almost is reflective of, you know, you'll hear about certain religious groups sort of befriending people and then introducing them to the idea of you know, belonging to their faith. That's what it felt like for me.
Oh, that's very interesting. People have said that. I think, you know, I don't know about you, but I remember when I was 17, and it's definitely one of the most tumultuous periods, I think, in many people's lives. And he definitely, you know, I think these are kids who weren't certain what they wanted to do, and they were looking for someone to help guide them, and he was that person. He was the one at their basketball games, at their, you know, their asking them about their English homework. And he was the one who was there at every time, following what the kids were doing and seeing what they needed in order to progress.
And even after they've signed on the dotted line, he sort of sticks with them and helps them to prepare for their training. Here we're going to hear him coaching Chris, who is this overweight recruit, nervous about passing his physical fitness tests, coaching him on a 2 mile run.
Come on, man, I believe in you. Let's go. The rest of the Army believes in you. Not everybody can be a soldier. It ain't for everybody, but if somebody's that it's for, we gotta push ourselves to the maximum. You can make it, brother. Let's go. Come on. That's not a general term. You're my brother now. You to me are just like my own flesh and blood. Don't let me down, because I will never let you down. Let's go. You got to stick with it. Breathe deep, deep. Chris, what's the most important thing to you in life? Tell me right now.
Being in the Army.
Being in the Army. We're a lap and a half away. You stay on my hip. We're in this fight together. We are in this fight together. I just fell down. You gonna leave me laying down or you gonna come pick me up? Come on. Would you pick me up? You can do this, baby. I know you can make this run. Let's go. You refuse to quit and you refuse to accept defeat. And you ain't gonna leave me hanging. Let's go. Come on. Stay on my hip. Come on.
This is killing me.
I know it is. See that young American? He's watching you. He needs you. He needs you. He needs you to be able to run faster than him, because he expects you to keep him free. I know what you're made of. You just got to push yourself. Don't give up on me, Chris. You cannot give up on me. You got it. You stay with me. You stay with me, and I'm staying with you. 15, 20, 21, 22, 23. Walk it off. Look me in the eye. Look me in the eye. You did it, brother. You did it.
That was a scene from the documentary The Recruiter, which premieres tonight at 9 on HBO. Filmmaker Edith Belzberg is here to talk about the film. Such a powerful scene. I want to know, when you listen back to that, What qualities it makes you think of that you saw in Clay Uzay?
Well, definitely he believes in that teenager when he doesn't. I mean, you can't see it over the radio, but, you know, he's an overweight kid. He talks about wanting to lose weight, and he's unsure of himself. He talks about signing up for the Army because of the large bonus he receives. I mean, it is one of the equally enticing things for him that he speaks about in the film. But he also is unsure of his abilities, and that scene, you see Clay helping him overcome something that was very difficult.
The thing that was really striking, and we didn't hear it in that particular clip, but right before then, Clay tells him, "I'm not going to let you fail. You won't fail because I won't let you." And it's powerful during that 2-mile run, but you have to wonder, you know, no recruiter, Clay Uzay, is not going to be there
right
when that soldier's out on the field.
Right. Clay does, I mean, he does have an ability, and I think, again, why he's successful is he was able to see past certain impediments and obstacles some of the kids had at that time, and I think that's also why the kids responded to him, because he saw past certain things, obstacles that they were facing at that time. But Chris actually, you know, he completed one tour in Iraq, and he's actually on his second tour today. But the ensuing scene is also one that's very difficult. I don't know if that's something that that you'll be playing later in the show, but that's also something when Chris's stepfather calls, and there's actually a bit of conflict between Clay and the stepfather and Chris, and it's a difficult scene.
We don't have a clip of that to play, but let's talk about it a little bit, because Clay Uzay has sort of publicly come out and said the way he was portrayed in that section of the film wasn't reflective of the way he really conducts himself. Mm-hmm. I mean, we see it there on tape, but what happens, I guess, is that the stepfather of this boy who wants to enlist, this young man who wants to enlist, is trying to convince Uzay not to sign him up and trying to convince his stepson not to do it. Can you fill it out for us?
Sure. I mean, I think it's hard to do it in such a short period, but I think it's indicative of what happens. I mean, I think the film also, I choose a few teenagers, all of whom I feel reflect a bit what's happening. I mean, you have Bobby, who wants to join. It's something he's wanted to do for a long time, and his father is opposed to it, and his mother, who is more reticent about it. You have Lauren, who really doesn't want to, heart's not in it, but her mother really feels that this is the best choice for her to overcome her situation and to pursue a life that she feels is best for her. And then there's Chris, who I think, you know, you see in that scene that his parents are having issues with it, and I think it's indicative of much of what's happening in these teenagers' lives. You know, they're making very difficult decisions, you know, whether they decide to, what they decide to do with their life, and to sign up for 5-6 years is one of the hardest. Some parents are in favor of it, and some parents are not. And I think what that scene shows there is the difficulties that are there, that exist, and how Clay responds to it.
And Clay Uzay, the recruiter, essentially tells this young man, "Your stepfather is an idiot. He's lazy. Don't listen to him anymore. I'm your father now."
That is, I mean, I don't think he says he's an idiot. I don't think that he never.
I'm sorry, I'm paraphrasing, but he speaks to him without a great deal of respect for the authority that the stepfather might have had.
I think what he's trying, I mean, I think he feels that one thing is right for Chris, and the stepfather thinks it's another, and then at that point, that's the conflict that we see in the film, and that's the conflict that I think exists in many households.
What's the typical MO for an Army recruiter today? How do they conduct themselves and sort of get leads and follow up on those?
I think, I mean, from a number of things. I mean, I can only go from what I saw and from the various methods used by the recruiters I was with. And, you know, the high schools are the most fertile ground, I think, you know, in specific high schools in specific areas. But they... Clay and his fellow recruiters were at the high schools, I think, you know, regularly, and they were talking to the kids regularly. As I said, they know about their basketball games and their school exams and all of that. They're at the shopping malls, and they're where teenagers are today. And they talk to them about what they want, what their goals are, what their futures are, and then they keep in touch with them.
We'll listen now to a clip of another recruiter who is less successful than Clay Uzay at his job, being called on the carpet for not meeting his signing goals.
Did you get any leads from Montego?
I talked to people, but because I didn't get no names, but I did talk to them and I handed out business cards.
Business cards, would you say? You know,
I handed out four business cards that day.
Four business cards in a whole day?
Yeah.
Right. You got to work with Hull in sales.
You know, you got to work with him.
We can't tolerate much more, you know, potential.
Right.
We got to make a move on him, you know, and that's part of it. We just make a move on him in 5 months, give him a wake-up call. He hasn't improved in 9 months. We eject him.
We go to work about 8:30 in the morning, get home anywhere from 9:30 to 10 o'clock at night on most nights. And that's what it takes to find people. Doing my part to fill the foxholes in Iraq and Afghanistan. Majority of my time in Iraq was spent doing raids, patrols, and security. And I personally saw people hurt. And it was a life-changing experience. I don't like talking about stuff that I saw in Iraq.
Sounds, first of all, like that individual is in the wrong job for where his mind is. But it sounds like such a high-pressure environment, like they're selling used cars or refrigerators or something. Could he have been fired for not delivering recruits or just reassigned?
Well, reassigned, but reassigned into the regular Army. But it's reassigned. I mean, it's more than that. I think that, you know, if you don't meet your mission, There are ramifications of, you know, then you have to uproot your family and you might be demoted. I mean, there are a lot of ramifications of not completing his mission. That particular, I did a follow-up interview with that particular sergeant, and he has actually decided to end his career in recruiting, and he will be redeployed to Iraq soon. It was just, he felt it was not for him, and it was just too difficult. The pressure of recruiting, putting two recruits in per month, which was what his quota was too difficult for him.
Who wants to join the Army in Houma, Louisiana?
I think the film really reflects that. It's a cross-section of people, and I think to compartmentalize is not fair and can be and dangerous. I mean, I think that, again, you have, I show Bobby who, you know, honor student, his father's a lawyer, a mother biology teacher, could do anything he wanted, who was just asked actually to program in West Point. I mean, one of the most intelligent boys I've had the opportunity to meet and unbelievably successful in his career in the Army, but he could have done anything and gone to any university, and he felt that this is what he wanted to do. He wanted to follow in the footsteps of his father and grandfather and on both sides of his family who served in Vietnam and World War II.
We will learn a little bit more about Bobby after we take a quick break. Filmmaker Edith Belzberg is my guest. The film is called The Recruiter. It's a documentary that premieres tonight at 9 on HBO. If you want to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, a way to keep your greatest two tools, creativity and curiosity, sharp. Details online at smu.edu/MLS.
You are listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is filmmaker Edie Belzberg. Her documentary, The Recruiter, will premiere tonight at 9 on HBO. If you want to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Before the break, Edie, you were telling us about Bobby, this honor student who had parents of means, probably didn't need to join the Army to pay for school, but he really wanted to be in Special Forces.
Right, that's right. And I think that's really, you see a cross-section of the people who, of the young men and women who are joining today. Bobby clearly did not need the high school, the college benefits. And then you have someone like Lauren, for whom it was really the best option for her. What she thought at the time, it was the best option to attain her goal, which was to be an art teacher. It wasn't. She ended up going AWOL and is now in a worse situation today than she would have been had she not joined. And I think that's when people are joining for only the college benefits, that's when there is a problem that we have to look at.
It was a really interesting contrast between Lauren's mother, who, of all of them, seemed the most supportive among the parents of her daughter joining. Here we hear Bobby and his father sharing very different perspectives about what his enlistment might bring.
I'm a veteran. Both of his grandfathers are veterans. We have immediate family members who are in the military. So I couldn't sit there and say, as some families do, well, you're stupid if you do go in the military. Let somebody else do that. I could not give him that argument. I simply wanted to present to him the reality. We are at war.
Stay alive! Stay alive! Never!
Bobby's been pre-qualified for some type of special forces training, and I think he wants to see if he can accomplish that. He sees it as a challenge.
I want to see combat and go out there and fight and serve. Like when you see the Army commercials and stuff, and they show the guys out there doing the missions, that's probably special forces out there doing that, and that's really the appealing thing, you know? Running around and with a rifle and doing what Rangers do and stuff like that.
What do Rangers do?
You know, I really don't know. I mean, they do, like, the big missions. They do the missions that they know that have the most important ones, because they know that they're the best and they're the ones who can get it done better than anybody.
He's made his decision. I don't know that any 18-year-old can really understand that the end of his life could be around a corner in Iraq.
That is a clip from Edie Belzberg's documentary, The Recruiter, which premieres tonight at 8 on HBO at 9. Our telephone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-933-5372. Edie, that's such an interesting section of the film. And I guess that was your voice on tape when you say, what do the Rangers do? And he couldn't tell you. And although I guess he's doing very well now, that had to strike you at the time as sort of a worrisome sort of naivete.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think many of the kids who are incredibly impressed and stimulated by, as he says, the Army commercials, and he also various war films. You know, the library in his room was just all filled with different war movies that he was had an impact on him. But I think I saw that a lot, where kids were joining, they weren't certain what they were getting themselves into. I think, you know, in a basic training, you saw that kind of "oh my God" moment with many of the kids. And in fact, in the film, you see one girl suffering from a pretty severe panic attack, and then you see others who are adapting well, such as Bobby. But I think, you know, Lauren, after the film, and also a few of the other recruits as well, said they weren't certain what they were getting themselves into, that they felt that also some of them felt that they were too young to make that decision, and others felt that they were equipped. So, again, I think you see the variety of the different situations that emerge.
Yeah, did Lauren, she didn't seem to even be looking forward to things as much as what was going to come after being in the Army. That
right.
was a means to an end for her. And I guess she didn't have any other options financially to consider going to college.
No, she didn't. I think that's one thing, that the kids don't know what other options exist for them. And I think that is something that I think it should be remedied. I mean, the kids didn't know the various community colleges. They didn't know the various scholarships and government loans that are available to them. They didn't know about AmeriCorps and other options for getting a college education. That said, I think there should be greater options. I mean, I think people like Lauren and other people who are joining just for college, which is the number one reason, according to a few studies, why civilians do join the Army. If that is the case, I mean, I think these kids should have other options. I don't think that the Army should be the means to the end. As you see with Lauren, it didn't work out. And as I said, she's in a worse place today because of it.
It gets lonely because don't ask, don't tell. You can't be with the same sex in the Army. It gets lonely. You don't know how much you miss until you ain't been around them. Like, I miss so much that she, like, just holding her and stuff like that, just being with her. Hey, you're not supposed to put on a carrot. You cheater. That's my baby. See, now you know who she is. I think that's one of the things my mom thought would change. I wouldn't be gay no more. It ain't changing.
That's such a sad scene. And when she goes home for leave, things really haven't improved for her at home either. They're bad in the Army and they're bad at home.
And that's true. And she's doing better now. I mean, I think she's happy to be in an environment where she can be herself. She can be open with her sexuality. And for her, even though she's lost certain scholarships that she would have had before, it's a better situation for her. I think she's happier today than she was then.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. My guest is filmmaker Edith Belzberg. Her documentary, The Recruiter, premieres tonight at 9 on HBO. Let's speak to Diane in Fort Worth. Hi, Diane.
Yes, this is Diane from Fort Worth.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. I'm a member of a counter-military.
Hello.
I think we're losing. I think we're losing you, Diane.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
My name is Diane. I'm a member of Peaceful Vocations, which is a counter-military recruitment group in Fort Worth, serving North Texas. And what we do is we go into high schools and we counsel youth concerning the realities of military life.
Mm-hmm.
And we also give a lot of college scholarship information in different career paths. We are very concerned, however, that because we've been doing lots of research, we've been doing this now for 3 years, and what we see and know is that the military targets low-income areas, particularly in schools with a high population of Hispanic and African-American children, because they know that a lot of kids feel lost with the economy the way it is. It's kind of hidden, but there's just simply very few jobs, and kids don't often get the help they need from school counselors or from their parents. And so we have experienced many, many mistruths that the military has given to kids, how they'll just come in and get them a job and their college will be paid for. The facts are that Army and military jobs are very, very rarely transferred to civilian jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And also the college money that's given is not even nearly enough college money to pay, and then you've got to finish. You've got to finish your 8 years required service in the military before you're eligible for it.
Diane, thank you so much. You brought up some great points. I want to make sure that we have adequate time for Edie to respond.
Exactly.
So thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Did you see? Let's start with this, Edie. Did you see any kind of deception taking place?
I don't. I mean, it's hard for me. I mean, Sergeant Uze, I think he was very clear with the kids. But I think what you see is with kids, you know, at 17, that, you know, they don't know the questions to ask all the time, and they really want something. They want their path set out for them, you know, and I think that sometimes the Army encapsulates everything the kids want at that time, a second home, being patriotic, giving something back to their country, and college education. So at that time, I think that it can seem like winning the lottery.
Well, it almost seems like, you know, they're so young. They hear what they want to hear.
Well, I think they also don't know the questions to ask, to know that if this is the best thing for them. And as she mentioned, I mean, if they are signing up for school, I mean, and she brought up a good point. Many people do sign up for school and then very few people actually end up using those benefits. I think only 8% use all the benefits, and I think as high as 30% don't use it at all. And I think, but it must be mentioned that there's a new GI Bill. For many years, the soldiers couldn't transfer. If they didn't use it, then they couldn't transfer these benefits on. And with the new GI Bill that was passed by Senator Webb from Virginia, these benefits can now be passed on to their children, which is fantastic. So if a soldier who's served, you know, 2-3 tours, and it's understandable that he or she is unable to sit in a classroom, that soldier will be able to pass on those benefits to his or her children, which I have to say is a great achievement. I'll let you ask the next question.
Well, our caller also described being a member of a counter-recruitment group, and I don't know that we saw any of those in the film, but there was a really difficult time when there were 6 soldiers in the same unit who came from Houma that were killed at the same time in Baghdad. And you show a scene where Clay Uzay goes back into the local high school to do his thing, to recruit, and virtually everybody in the room except about 3 people, hundreds of people, stand up and walk out before he has a chance to start.
Yeah, I don't even think 3 people stayed. I think it's maybe 1 person. Yeah, it was a pretty devastating scene, and that was right on the heels of when, as you mentioned, the soldiers were killed in Iraq, which was a devastating incident for the people of Houma. I think that was a difficult time for Sergeant Uzay in a reality check. I mean, you saw also this is a community that has always been fervently, you know, in support of what was happening, and then you saw that the room just cleared out, and I think he was very hurt by that.
Any doubt in your mind that he believes 100% that he's doing the right thing and doing the right thing for the recruits that he signs on?
No, I have to say. If I did, the film would have taken a different turn. I have to say that he really believes that this is the best. That he, I can't say that he loved doing what he was doing all the time, but he took it very seriously. And then I think he believed that this was the kids who he was putting in the army, this was the best choice for them. I do think that he thought that, or he wouldn't have been able to do it. Whether or not it is, that's another issue. But he did believe it at that time.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next to Ramos in Dallas. Hi, Ramos.
Yes, I'm very happy that this documentary came out. It's going to help young men educate themselves on the issue. I think that the broader issue here is that the military, you know, it's going to hurt on the long run, because there's a reason why they have so many suicides, because there are young men who go there with unrealistic expectations, and they're not prepared, and they cannot handle. A soldier, a truly prepared soldier, does not commit suicide. I'm sorry to say that. He just doesn't. And if you're not prepared mentally and physically, especially mentally, then how is that good for anybody? There's a lot of misinformation out there put out by the military. There's no doubt about it. But I put all the fault on the parents. The parents need to educate the kids and maybe go down to the recruiting station with them and help them ask the right question. So this is a very dangerous thing, what the military is doing.
Thanks for your call. How welcome, Edith, were parents in the recruiting station?
I think that the recruiters were willing to talk to all parents about everything, you know, and it was ultimately between the parents' relationship and with their son or daughter. I would like to mention something that, which is about national service, which is something that is brought up in the film, and something that the earlier caller mentioned that, you know, I mean, there is a disproportionate number of soldiers are currently from, I think 40% are from rural communities, and 60% of those soldiers from rural communities are actually 60% more likely to be injured or die in combat. And I think that, you know, Clay mentioned something in the film, which is national service, and what I saw also with these kids is a lot of them just wanted to do something. They wanted to give, they did want to belong to something larger. They wanted to feel like they were contributing. And they didn't know, they didn't have many opportunities, or they didn't know exactly how to go about doing this. And ideally, it would be, I mean, how wonderful would it be if you could actually give something back to the country, do something, and then also receive a college education? I mean, it could not be, it could possibly that the military isn't the best thing for you. That's understandable. For many people, it's not the right thing, and nor should they be carrying this burden more so than other people in this country. And I think that that some sort of national service, which Sergeant Yuse mentions, would be a fantastic program. And it's something, you know, you're right, you don't see the different AmeriCorps and different organizations on the high school campuses that offer these opportunities. And, you know, the government, I think, and it was reported that $7 billion, $7 billion is spent annually on recruitment. And if similar amount were spent on some sort of national service where every young teenager could actually give something back and receive a college education, I think that would be a fantastic thing, and also not a pie in the, you know, a dream, not too something that's tangible, and it would only help with the advancement of this country and people's involvement with what's happening in this country. And not to take to continue too much, but you know, one thing that was interesting is when every time I would go to Houma, Louisiana, I felt I was at a country at war. Everyone was experiencing the war in some way. Everyone knew someone who died or was injured. And when I would come back to New York, it was a very different experience. Very different. I mean, it was not part of the daily conversation, and people, and no one I knew was serving or knew anyone who was serving, and I felt there was an imbalance. And at that time, I felt, my God, there needs to be some sort of program that we're all responsible for giving, and because of that, we're all more involved in what's happening.
Edith Belzberg is my guest. She's the filmmaker who produced and directed The Recruiter. It's a documentary that premieres tonight at 9 on HBO. If you want to join our conversation, we'd love to hear from you via email to think@kera.org. You can also call 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, a way to keep your greatest two tools, creativity and curiosity, sharp. Details online at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd, here this hour with filmmaker Edith Belzberg. She directed and produced The Recruiter, a documentary that premieres tonight at 9 on HBO. You can join us via email to think@kera.org. That's where we hear from Carol in Dallas, who writes, "My daughter was a 2007 honor graduate of high school. She was a National Merit Commended Scholar. Colleges all over the place were begging her to apply. We are reasonably well off. Amy chose to join the Army, and she loves it. She's stationed at Fort Bragg, where she's in language school. She qualified as a paratrooper. During the recruitment process, we became well acquainted with her recruiting sergeant, who answered all of our questions. We were always welcome in the recruiting office." I read this letter because I know it's not your contention in the film that no one should join the Army, or that it's not a process that works for some people.
That's right. And I think that really what I was trying to do with this film is, at the time, there were so many films that were polarizing, you know, for the red states, blue states, the CNN watchers, the Fox watchers, and I felt that there was a communication block, and I felt that I really wanted to create a film that was unifying in a way that was, I wasn't preaching. In the film, there isn't a voiceover, you don't have my voice, and it's not my point of view. It's really the stories of the individuals involved, and the point was really for people to be connected to those who are serving, whether they agree with it or not, whether they agree with their choice or not, but at least they understand, and they understand why those who see it as their only option, why they're doing it, and perhaps to look at that situation of, wait a minute, we shouldn't be in it, there should be no one for whom this is the only option, and to look at those for whom it's the best option, and they're doing it because they love it, and for patriotism, and for many different reasons, and I hope that film accomplishes that it's not a divisive film, and it enables people to see it through the perspective of those who are serving, for the reasons why they're serving, and for it to be something that, which I think is happening right now, that it's that everyone can discuss and grow from.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Pete in Arlington. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Chris. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
It's a great program today. The question that I have for your guest is, how does she think her story or her documentary would have been different if we had a draft in this country? And where I'm going with this is there's many, many cultural issues just below the surface in the issues that she presents in her movie, as you've discussed it. And I think a critical issue is with the all-volunteer military, with some of the advantages it has broken the link of the citizen-soldier. When we had a draft, there was the clear-cut signal that one had an obligation to serve. That link has been broken, and we now have simply a free market approach to getting people into the military. So, again, my question is, how do you think your documentary would have been different if you could have done it all if we had a draft? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call. Have you given that any thought?
Absolutely. I honestly think I wouldn't have made a film. I don't think I would have had the opportunity to make a film because I don't know if we would have been in the war, to be honest with you. I think it would have been a very different situation if every person were responsible, if everyone had the responsibility of serving. I don't know if we would have actually gone to war.
Let's speak next to Rick in Dallas. Hi, Rick. Hello, Rick. Are you with us? Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm here.
Go ahead, Rick.
I apologize. Yeah, so kind of, you know, that kind of adds to my comment. Mm-hmm. I come from the inner city. I'm a businessman now. I'm not in that same situation, thank God. But you know, I'm from El Paso, college degree, no resources. Much like some of the people that you're talking about, the military is targeting. You know, what I hope will come out on this conversation is really the resource and the benefit that the military brings to a set of people that really don't have a lot of options. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, granted, you know, those you know, recruiters are on performance-based plans, and they get paid for getting more people, and the lowest hanging fruit are people from those neighborhoods that don't have a lot of choices. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they should be demonized.
Of course.
And so just, you know, I mean, I hope that we'll give that perspective on the show that you know, they are a tremendous employer and a tremendous option. You know, we're in a time of war right now, so that kind of makes it, you know, the stakes are higher. But take away the war and think of how the military has been so huge to my largely uneducated family and kind of the posterity that's even available as an option to my family because of the military service. Not to mention, you know, the French people kissing soldiers on the streets during World War II because of the impact that we made in their life. So just, you know,
Rick,
I hope that comes out.
Thanks for your call. And I can tell you that the film does not demonize the recruiters, at least not to my mind.
At all, if anything. I mean, thank you for that. Thank you for that. And that question and statement, it doesn't demonize them, and I agree that you know, the military also offers tremendous benefits for many people who need them. And oops, hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I have to say, I mean, just to add to the fact that the recruiters are not demonized, I mean, the greatest. I think that you know, one of the greatest successes I had with the film is that when it showed to an all, you know, New York audience, that people walked away saying, my God, I thought I was going to hate him, and I actually like him, you know, because I think that you understand him. You might not agree with everything he does. You might not agree with his tactics, but I think you respect his love and his dedication to this country. And to serving. Oh, I don't know why it's so... I'm sorry for that static.
Oh, it's okay. It happens, unfortunately.
So I just wanted to thank the caller. And I think the military is a tremendous employer. However, I also think that there should be more options. I mean, when the teenagers I saw, when they felt that that was their only choice, I felt that they should have greater options. And if that's a national service plan where you work in, you know, you teach for a year or work in a homeless shelter or do something, and then you can regain certain benefits for a college in the same way, I think that would be a fantastic advancement for this country.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Ted in Tyler. Hello, Ted.
Hi, how are you?
Great,
well,
thanks.
Yeah, the beginning of your book talked about, well, first of all, let me just answer what you just mentioned. There are plenty of options for we the poor growing up other than the military. Mm-hmm. I grew up poor in the city in Los Angeles, and I didn't go to the military. I could have, but I chose not to. Now, additionally, 17- and 18-year-olds do have brains. They do understand that military means possible war. They're not stupid. Most of them, many of them go in, and they talk and they think in terms of getting a college education. No question about it, but that's a fringe benefit. Can they go off to war, a possibility of going off to war? Of course, and I think they're smart enough to know that. If we can fight for a 13-year-old's permission or not to have permission from her parents to have an abortion, certainly we can fight for the right for a 17-year-old to enter into the military without having to have somebody feel sorry for them that they're not making good choices because they haven't had a lot of insight or giving all the information. And from the beginning of your show, you talked about how the recruiters and the people who present this are one-sided, and they're not telling the whole story. So certainly the film will be polarizing and divisive like you said it wouldn't be.
I don't think that's true. I never said that, sir. I mean, I thank you for your comment, and I agree with much of what you said, but I don't think I ever said that they're not giving the whole story. I mean, if anything, I said Sergeant Yuse was everything from what I saw. He was always presenting everything to the kids and more. So I don't think that's an accurate portrayal of what I said. But I do respect your and agree with much of what you said.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Don in Dallas. Hello, Don.
Hello.
Hi, Don.
Oh, hi. Listen, I just want to be sure we're using the right statistics on things. The CDC's latest study shows that 18 to 25-year-olds in the civilian population, non-military, have a higher suicide rate than the military 18 to 25 years old. Do we have that fact correct?
I'm not sure. I trust your statistics.
Well, my problem here is you make it sound as if there's so many suicides in the military because something terrible there is happening, and yet among our general population, same age group, it's higher in the civilian side than it is the military side, which would indicate you're probably less likely to commit suicide if you're in the military than if you stay 18 to 25 in the civilian population.
I actually don't think I gave that statistic. I think that was a caller who gave that statistic. And suicide within the military or outside the military is not a part of the film.
None of the people you profile seem to have that on their minds at all.
No, mm-hmm. No, not at all.
Edith, have you come to any conclusions about why certain people really do thrive in the military environment and other people have such a hard time coping, even after they've signed up knowing what they were getting into?
I mean, I think that's a very complicated question, but I think that, you know, as you see in the film, Matt and Bobby, they do exceptionally well, and they're exceptional soldiers today. Matt is actually a recruiter today. He did a 15-month tour in Iraq, and he's back in home recruiting, and he's expecting a baby soon, and he hopes to serve his entire life in the Army. He loves it so much, and Bobby is actually getting ready to deploy. He just finished his Special Forces training, and as I said, he was even picked to enter a program at West Point, and he's doing incredibly well. And Lauren, although the military wasn't right for her, I just visited her, and she's very happy. Lauren, although she did go AWOL, I have to say during that time in basic training, she did exceptionally well. It was really during the intermediary period between basic training and deployment that she had a very difficult time. I think it's individually based. I think it's very difficult to answer that. I mean, everybody has their own, the reasons why they succeed in life, and they have certain obstacles, and it's not for them. And so I'm not sure how to answer that, but I think that what the film shows is that for each person, some succeed, and some it's not the right choice for them.
Was military service something that you ever considered personally?
No, it was not. But I have to say that when I was filming basic training and I was going through many of the exercises with the soldiers and the drill sergeants, I developed a tremendous respect for everything they were going through. And I know that that's just a fraction of what's done on a daily basis. But I think the marches and just the rigor of basic training, and you know, the drill sergeants are often demonized in all of the films that we see, and they're unbelievable in terms of also their dedication in preparing these young men and women for war. And so I did develop a deep respect for the process.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Liko in Arlington. Hi, Liko.
Great show as usual. Thought-provoking. I'm a member of the United States Selective Service Board, the local one. And when I ran for U.S. House in 2004, I suggested that we have a real selective service where every man and possibly women, 18 to 25, would serve 2 years, either in the military, Peace Corps, some blighted area in the hospital and school district, because I think they give some esprit de corps, give some discipline, allows them also to get the GI Bill. But the question that I have is, what is the general consensus of your host, your show guest there? And I'll take it offline.
What do you think about some sort of compulsory service?
Service for the military or service for the country?
I think he meant service for the country.
I agree for service for the country. I don't think military is for everybody. And I think that, you know, I don't think the soldiers, with whom I've spoken, they don't want to be, you know, as they say, in a foxhole with someone to their left or right who doesn't want to be there. That's the worst situation. So I don't think the military is for everybody, but some sort of service for the country, and that I would wholeheartedly agree with. I think that it would only make us all feel more engaged with what's happening today in the world, with the war, and more of an affinity with those who are serving and who are giving their lives and for this country. So I'm for that.
So Sergeant Yuse was promoted to Master Sergeant, is that right?
Yes.
And what's he doing now?
He is on leave, and he will be starting a new position. So I think it's best to ask him what that position will be. I don't feel that I'm in a position to say that.
That's fine. So you can't say whether he'll still be recruiting?
No, he's not recruiting. Okay. He's not recruiting anymore.
Okay. Edie Belzberg directed and produced the film The Recruiter. It makes its debut tonight at 9 on HBO. Edie, fascinating film, great conversation. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure. Thank you.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.